we are hoping to show you just what is possible out there in our strange and wondrous world.
We travel for business. We travel for pleasure.
The story that I had to tell my American audience was very different from the stories that I had to tell to my Rwandan audience.
We travel to expand our minds.
Of course, the most dangerous animal in Africa is the hippo. More people are killed by hippos than anything else.
Whether it's one state over.
I was looking for a longer treatment, like 90 days, 6 months. And my treatment plan was to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
Or halfway around the globe.
This fantastic high desert. You watch the sky at night, so you just see the Milky Way and shooting stars.
If the world's a book, why only read one page? I'm Elizabeth Hill, and you're listening to a WAMC Northeast Public Radio production. This is Postcards from the Road.
Support for Postcards from the Road comes from CEFQ, serving banking, insurance, and investment needs with more than 30 branches across the Greater Capital Region. Also offering assistance to local nonprofit organizations through CEFQ's Community Support Program. CEFQ, changing lives every day. CEFQ.com.
From museums and films to ancient ruins reimagined in modern art and animation, the majority of reconstructions of past societies have focused upon illustrating visually how individuals observed their environment and navigated through it. As a global community, one key sense in reconstructing the past has consistently been ignored: sound. The topic of sound has been discussed at the theoretical level in phenomenology, which is the study of structures of consciousness as experienced from the first-person point of view. However, there is a growing field beginning to explore sound at the site level. Archaeologist Christy Primo works as an environmental analyst with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Primo has been working with archaeologist David Witt, the Indian Nations Affairs Coordinator for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, to expound on this practical exploration of sound through archaeoacoustics.
Archaeoacoustics is the study of sound in archaeology. Our research particularly focuses on sound at the landscape scale, although you can also study archaeoacoustics of a specific site or of an artifact.
The pair's research was published in the 2017 Spring Journal of Archaeological Science. Primo says they approached the project as a contextual experience of space and auditory perception as one of the ways in which people make sense of their world.
Well, this all started out as something we were working on at work as part of environmental review that we have to do at DEC. So we began by creating a Excel spreadsheet that did linear sound profiles from one point to another along a straight line path. And from there, Dave had actually created that one on his own. He came to me and approached me to see if we could get this into GIS to kind of create a 3D model. And both being archaeologists, we wanted to apply this to the past as well as to the present. This is a tool that you could use to model the sound anywhere, because sound physics behaves the same in the past as it does now.
What is GIS and how does it work?
So GIS stands for Geographic Information Systems, and it's a type of software that you use to display environmental data. It's kind of a cross between a relational database like Microsoft Access and Google Earth. And so what we have done is we've created a program that can model the way that sound spreads throughout a landscape in 3D. You can figure out how sound would have been experienced by a listener at any point in the landscape.
Primo and Witt's research takes us to the Chaco Canyon in New Mexico, home of the Anasazi or ancestral Puebloan people.
Chaco Canyon is, I'm thinking in metric, it's about 12 kilometer long, pretty shallow canyon. The cliffs only rise about 100 or so feet, 33 meters or so. It's pretty wide. From wall to wall, it ranges in between 1 mile to 4 miles, so about maybe 1.5 kilometers to 4 kilometers wide. It's got a series of erosional gullies coming in from either side. There's a giant butte right in the middle that's called Fajada Butte. There's not a lot of plant life there anymore. A lot of that was impacted by a erosional downcutting event that took place in the past 100 years or so, where the river cut down through its bank. It's pretty dusty. There's a lot of just dry grass that's in the area. There's some cottonwood trees that are in the gully itself. But it's pretty stark.
Primo highlights the variables used in the GIS mapping process.
These are 7 variables, and then, as Dave mentioned, the elevation data set, and then you need to input where your source of the sound is located, or you can have multiple sound sources. For the variables, there's 2 different categories. There's the environmental data and the data about the sound source itself. For the environmental data, you would need to have the temperature of the air and the percent of relative humidity, because that affects how the sound spreads in all of the sound physics calculations. You'd also need to know what the ambient sound pressure, so what the levels of sound are at the area that you're studying. Then the second group is the source of the sound, and those include the height of the sound source, the sound pressure level of the source, which is measured in decibels, the distance at which you measured the sound source, and the frequency of the source.
And when it comes to that environmental data, you know, climate change is definitely an aspect. One of the things about Chaco Canyon is that there's a good record of scientists looking at the paleoclimate and trying to reconstruct it. So we were able to look at that and pretty confidently use historical baseline data as a proxy for what the climate was 1,000 years ago. We can look at tree rings, we can look at pack rat middens, erosional processes, all these various other things that show that the climate generally has been stable within that time period.
But I was curious about how Primo and Witt were compensating for these structural changes over the years, and how it might shape future research.
Our tool basically models how sound spreads over the landscape that's put into it via a digital elevation model. So it's as accurate as that baseline data we put into it. So as a test for our technology, we were able to input all these things. We used a modern surface of Chaco Canyon. As we go back to it and keep working on this project, what we want to do is use reconstructed surfaces. And this is something that people have been working on in Chaco, where they've actually gone and modeled the height and the extent of these great houses. So we're hopefully going to be bringing in those models into this to create a more accurate representation of the surface back at that time. And with Chaco Canyon specifically, back in the 1940s, there was a major event where a specific cliff face collapsed. And that's a perfect example of what type of erosional processes would take place. Obviously, that collapse affects our modeling. So what we want to do is take this digital elevation model we have of the terrain and correct it, quote unquote, so that we could take into account the fact that this cliff face was present 1,000 years ago.
The implementations are vast, and using archaeoacoustics combined with other archaeological research could provide a more holistic understanding of the past.
For an educational aspect, I really feel strongly that this helps people just connect more strongly and more closely to the lived experiences of people that were in the past. I guess that's a bit axiomatic. But when we're talking about Chaco Canyon, it's a pretty desolate location. It's at the end of about a 20-mile corrugated dirt road. People don't go there just for fun, really. They go there for the environmental and educational aspects of the trip. So in a situation like that, we could easily see our tool being used within a historical interpretation of what was going on, where we could help point out, like, if you stand in this location, if you were there 1,000 years ago, you would have heard these sounds coming from certain locations. People go there today and it's pretty quiet. You hear the wind blowing through the grass and occasional plane flying overhead. But other than that, it's pretty quiet out there. And that's not how it was in 1100 AD. It was a very busy place at that time.
It's just like any other place that you'd have a bunch of people and animals and sounds and ceremonies and all of those things. And these could all be worked into a tourism type experience through kiosks, through audio tours, and that type of interpretive material.
That brings up a project we've been working with some colleagues of ours over in the University of Nebraska over in Lincoln, where we're looking at recreating the Mayan city of Copan in a computer application where people can go and walk through it. And as part of it, these structures are being recreated in 3D representation, and you can put on your goggles and explore it. But it would also tie in our sound, because we're able to map where certain sounds would be heard as you're walking through that landscape.
So that kind of brings in virtual reality modeling, as well as back to your question about how the landscape has changed, because now in this future project we have, we are actually working with a reconstructed past landscape instead of just putting a past reconstruction on a modern landscape.
Are there any more projects in the near future?
We've had some conversations with other researchers. We were looking at working with a former classmate of mine at UB. She looks at early medieval Irish landscapes. And part of what we were talking about doing together was using sound as a way to hypothesize if the wealthier people, the wealthier class, actually had situated their homes in relationship with others, or perhaps out of sound from others so that they got more quiet. We just were tossing a bunch of ideas around that. And we have a few other concepts that we're teasing out.
Yeah, we've discussed doing something with the War of 1812 for more of a historical aspect. And we're also working on expanding the tools themselves to be able to do more things. So what would the impact be of thick vegetation like you'd have in a jungle type situation? Or what would the impact be if you had multiple loud sound sources occurring at different points in the landscape in the same time? Because sound doesn't just layer up. You can't just add two pieces of sound together. You have to do it logarithmically. So that's something that we would need the software to help us with.
In the time since Postcard's interview with David Witt and Christy Primo, the pair have continued working with Assistant Professor of Anthropology Heather Richards Rosetto of the University of Lincoln, Nebraska, and one of her former grad students, Graham Goodwin, to tie their modeling with their virtual reality constructions. Witt and Primo were able to create a walkthrough of the Acropolis of Copan in Honduras, illustrating how sounds would have been experienced as one walked through a ritual procession. This was just a video, not something that anyone could have controlled, and not something that one could experience with VR goggles. But it's a start. The pair have also done some follow-up work on Chaco Canyon, which was presented at the European Association of Archaeologists in Barcelona. There they highlighted how Chacoan elites could have manipulated the unique soundscape of the canyon for political purposes. Witt and Primo are now working with another colleague, Jennifer Schaefer Foster, to explore how sound could have played a role in the reinterpretation and reuse of sites in the Irish landscape. Postcards from the Road is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. I'm your host and producer, Elizabeth Hill. Our theme music is Cherry Blossom Wonders by Kevin MacLeod. As always, if you like what you hear, subscribe on your audio app of choice. Visit WAMCpodcasts.org for more information. If you would like to share your travel story with WAMC, email us at postcards@wamc.org.